Okay, welcome to Blue Sarah's Telehealth Radio in 95.9 FM, WATD. We're back for another great show. We have some great guests lined up. And with us is our show sponsor, Michelle Hager from Blue Sarah's Consulting. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Joe. Always great to be on the radio with you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited for the show tonight. We have some great guests from Maine and we have a doctor from Boston and a publisher from a health media organization. So a lot of great interviews and great information for our listeners. But let me start our show off tonight with a great guest who we've had on before from the great state of Maine. Reid Plimpton is an experienced telehealth resource. The Northeast Telehealth Resource Center is federally funded to provide technical assistance to develop, implement, and expand telehealth services in New England and New York. Reid, how you doing?
Good man. Thank you guys for having me back. It's a pleasure to be here.
Always good to have you.
Yeah, Reid, we had you on the show during the pandemic and things were going crazy, but you stated telehealth increased over 800% in the number of requests called into your NETRC offices. Did you see telehealth retain these patients and help them access the care they needed? What is the largest request for telehealth? I read a Medicare study reporting RPM was up over 500%.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it definitely retained at a higher sort of status quo than pre-COVID, right? Like, I think one of the studies I had recently estimated was that, 40% of patients nationwide had done a telehealth visit of some kind. And, previously, I think it was closer to 15%, maybe 20, but right around there. So, we're talking double that. And I think that's a testament to the providers' sort of passion and ingenuity to be able to stand up all these new avenues of care that they hadn't done before, but also a testament to the folks that have been doing it for the last 2 decades, kind of being willing to share their stories, their lessons learned, the things that worked well, the things that didn't, right? I think when you think about what was the largest request, I think undoubtedly mental health, behavioral health, which both make sense pre-policy or pre-COVID policies wise, in the sense that there was a lot of avenues for that to be permissible nationwide, and it makes sense from a sort of national statistics standpoint of the sort of unmet mental health needs. But then after that, it probably depends on like the state landscape and the populations you're looking at. The reimbursement and the permissibility from a provider perspective differs so much pre-COVID that whether or not people had done any sort of groundwork and legwork to establish some of these avenues of care via technology definitely differs across the nation. I think for the Northeast, on top of developmental behavioral health, we would add a lot of unique avenues within adolescent care, wellness checks, urgent care visits, and sort of a triage mentality or modality, if you will. And then, some like across the lifespan, some like follow-up care, getting more established as a telehealth interaction, right? So like you can think about like a rheumatology follow-up or care management or medication management, being able to shift that, shift the travel off of that and use tech for that.
Yeah,
And then, like, go ahead, Michelle.
even surgery follow-up. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think that's really one of the cooler parts about it is it shows that, people have found the benefit in a way that they're going to intertwine it. It's going to be, strung throughout our care experience. Yeah, the
Exactly.
only other thing I wanted to mention was telephysical therapy. I know we talked about that briefly last time, but I think that's a really unique use case that's popped up across our region and across the US, and it's really powerful outcomes in terms of, interaction with the patients, the frequency of it, resulting in their increased mobility and agility, things like that.
So Reid, can I just ask you to just back up on that? So telephysical therapy visits, tell our listeners what that looks like, who is eligible for that, or who typically takes advantage of that, and because I've certainly have had, in my experience, had some physical therapy visits, right, face to face. And then recently my son had a sports injury and had some telephysical therapy. But I see that you're seeing a lot of the elder generation is taking care of this, as is taking advantage of this as well.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I think lack of familiarity prevents me from sort of expanding upon like what the landscape was pre-COVID. I wasn't hearing about it, I guess is what I would say. But it's as you alluded to a moment ago, post-surgery, especially, right? Like, so if you think I've had knee surgery, if I were to think about like the process after that, There's the 2 week follow-up, and then there's the 1 month follow-up, and then you've established, now you have a physical therapist and you're going through your sort of new clinical encounter.
Yeah.
And you have exercises you're supposed to be doing while you're at home. And so you could do those over a video. If you have questions about whether or not you're doing them properly, you could record it and you could send it. There are, some physical therapy offices that have kind of gotten it so protocolized, if I can make up a word,
No,
that,
yeah.
they're actually their first encounter with the patient may be during one of the interactions with the clinical specialist in that initial first month via video, right? Establishing, hey, here's some of the things we're going to do. Let me show you this. Your provider you're with today is going to provide you this packet. You're going to meet me in a month, and then we'll establish a new protocol. Do you have tech devices? Doing sort of that literacy and digital equity scan as well.
Yeah.
And then with the older generation, I think that's it's one of those like distal care things as well, right? Like a lot of the wellness courses have found ways to kind of exist online, and that increases, the availability for anyone within a long-term care facility or anything like that, but also folks that maybe, be aging alone or aging at home, to, participate in sort of these community interaction opportunities. So it's no longer just the physical and the health benefit, but they're getting this sort of social interaction as well. And then you have like telesitting, things like that. That's
Yeah.
more, it's getting out of, physical therapy a little bit.
Right. But it's still a camera-based service for sure. But yeah, I was actually amazed to see that happen with my teenage son. Like I said, had a sports injury as part of the lacrosse that he loves to play. And they suggested, hey, let's do a televisit because he wasn't able to, because a face-to-face visit was so far out, actually. They suggested, hey, let's do a telehealth visit. We have a provider who's doing telehealth visits. And then my son is using, the cans of beans in the cabinet and the stretchy bands and his stick to recover his injury and is back to lacrosse. I think it's interesting to see what's happening with the elder generation, just to expand a little bit on that, because what we're seeing, I think, happen is trying, and as you mentioned, this idea of digital health equity, because so many people, as we've been expanding telehealth, now we've recognized, hey, wait a minute, maybe some people don't really understand how to utilize these digital devices that they have. They may have the fanciest phones, or maybe don't have them at all, which is a different problem. And then how do we, help them understand how to utilize applications to be able to connect to healthcare. And we don't want to just teach them, hey, this is how you connect to your doctor. Maybe instead it's, let me show you how to play Sudoku on your phone. Let me show you how to get to Pinterest so that you can get that recipe that you wanted, or let me show you how to do a FaceTime. And it's been really interesting in our work, certainly across the country, and how people have been able to expand their use and improve health equity across the country just by teaching people how to use digital devices. So just because we put that device in their hand doesn't necessarily mean they know how to use it. So Reed, tell us a little bit about the upcoming conference. I know we're all excited about it, planning to attend. It's in Southbridge on September 29th, on Thursday, and then again on Friday, September 30th. What's the best way to sign up? Tell me a little bit about what we can expect to see there.
Sure. Yeah. I love the digital equity pitch. I will add that, I think that one of the really exciting phases about the next period is thinking about how to, expand upon that, right? Can you actualize the younger generation to teach some of, their elders how to use some of this tech? Can you sort of operationalize the receptionist desk at the primary care facility to do some of this digital equity scans, things like that? It's going to be very it's empowering to see how much benefit was gained off just this like sort of first swath of, hey, let's get it out there. So now
Yeah.
it's really exciting to think about, hey, how can we, go next? But speaking of really exciting, yeah, later this month, September 29th, 30th, as you mentioned, will be our 8th annual conference. We're really looking forward to it. I think the audience type is, anyone is welcome online. We have an in-person and online component. I'll add that. So it's hybrid. Anybody online will be able to sort of watch a live stream of the event that's happening in person. And then where, the participants, if you will, the speakers, we have a few national speakers that I'll get into in a second, but the breakout sessions throughout the 2-day events are really representative of our region, right? So New England and New York, and it's boots on the ground folks that are doing the work. They're talking about things that they've tried, things that worked really well, recent publications, pilot projects. And so the theme of this year's conference is exploring the telehealth universe. And I think our agenda's really done a nice job of capturing that. We have telepharmacy, we have teleoccupational therapy, we have policy, we have billing and coding, we have stuff for FQHCs, we have e-consults, we have critical access hospital. It really cuts across the board. There's CME and CEU credits will be available, so that's always a nice plus, I think, for the practicing folks that may be listening to this. And then when you think about the national speakers that I mentioned, Alan Morgan, the CEO of the National Rural Health Association, will be our keynote speaker. Kind of coupling him with our featured speaker on day one, Chris Grasso, the Chief Information Officer at Fenway Health, which is, right in your listeners' area. They do really great work there. We're thrilled to have them. We'll have a sort of a policy panel discussion featuring Adam Del Molino from the Mass area, from Massachusetts Health and Hospital Association, Jeremy Scherer, and Catherine Plug. Really thrilled about that one. And then our sort of final, I think, featured speaker, if you will, is Dr. Elizabeth Krupinski, who's the assistant director of the Southwest TRC, but also a professor at Emory University. She just recently was a part of a publication team talking about, the very real realities of physician burnout, and how telehealth can help and how telehealth is currently hindering, and actually harming, maybe potentially. And so we're really excited for her to sort of close out the event talking about that and, giving folks actionable considerations to take away. On top of that,
That
Blue
is
Cheers
nice.
will be a part of it. And
Absolutely.
we're really looking
Absolutely.
forward to it.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. We're looking forward to it as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention, of course, that Signature Health will be there as well. Someone that we've been talking to and our client, helping them with their telehealth journey. And we're excited to be there. It's a great lineup, Reed. You guys have a great group of people to tell people exactly how and educate the public and the industry on how it's evolving and improving the universe of telehealth, as you said.
Sure. Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Signature Health. I will call out that they are among a few presentations we have of folks that really looked at how to implement telehealth like systematically, right? Like look at it from a not neat sort of spread it out and see what happens, more of a how does this most make sense for us? How does this most make sense for our patients? That sort of operational consideration that's so important for this work. I'm really looking forward to that presentation.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And Joe, I know you wanted to ask about the telehealth locator.
Yeah, I was on the website, Reed, and I saw the telehealth locator, and it was kind of fidgety, but I wasn't sure how to use that. Can you explain to our listeners what that does for you?
Sure. Yeah, that's actually, that is hot off the press. It's a relatively new tool that was developed by Netric and four other TRCs. Across the US. So it covers 24 states and 7 US territories currently in terms of the self-aggregated data, but nationally it has data on telehealth related information is how I want to start, right? So we really took the time to look at what's important information for every audience that might be involved in this conversation. Grant writers and researchers is one specific audience type, a provider or a health system as another, a patient or a consumer as a unique audience type, and what's important to them regarding telehealth, right? It's not just the facilities anymore. There's so many facilities doing telehealth. It's no longer like you're going to find two in a state. And so looking at it from that broader, perspective. So like you mentioned the grant writer view, currently we've released our USDA and USAC maps, which are, those are two federal agencies that have historically provided telehealth funding, but also historically have had some, unique nuances to the scores and the considerations that you need for an application. So those maps are tailored to what you need to apply for those funds. And that's kind of how we'll approach the grant writer view, as we add HRSA and CDC and things like that that have cross-cutting focuses, we might combine some things. We're currently looking at it from a federally funded sort of entity. And then the providers, I mean, I think that's something we're really excited to hear more about as we, as the tool gets more use. What are the providers actually looking for? We didn't think they needed the rurality scores or the census blocks or things like that. And so we really kind of trimmed it down to like social determinants of health factors, and other demographic information about their area. And then our uniquely curated data that we're kind of gathering in partnership with WIM Tracking LLC.
I think that's great. So you're really helping people get to the resources that they need and being able to ultimately see where is telehealth located and where can I access it as well and expand it.
Yeah, and where can you learn from others doing something in your area? Things like that. Exactly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Reed, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show tonight. I know that Joe, we wanted to quickly though find out about the physical exam. That you guys have created the physical exam by video to help community members know what does that look like and how is it offered?
Sure. Yeah. Netrick was thrilled to get to collaborate with Maine Health clinical leaders and the education and training team within Maine Health to develop this sort of best practices video. It's a real in-depth dive on, what best how you can achieve a physical visit via video. I think that's one of the more hotly contested topics right now. And there's definitely ways to achieve aspects of it. There are realities where you may need to elevate it to an in-person visit, but you can certainly achieve a generic physical exam over video. So it's like an 18-minute video that they've really broken down the different aspects of a video, a physical exam, and how that might work over video. Things to pay attention to from the patient perspective, things to make sure you ask about, so on and so forth. It's really well done. Thanks for mentioning it.
Absolutely. How do our listeners access that if they're interested?
Sure. Yeah. And actually, you just reminded me, I didn't mention the conference registration. If you go to our website, netrc.org, you'll find both. The conference website just adds conference in front of the NETRC, so conference.netrc.org. And the Maine Health video, I will be sure to share the link with my colleagues here so that they can link to it on the webpage, but it's available on our website, embedded on you, it's available on YouTube, so on and so forth.
That's great. So that's conference.netrc.org, correct?
Yep.
That's great. Thank you so much for being here tonight. We are looking forward to the 8th annual regional conference in Southbridge, as we mentioned, September 29th and 30th. Appreciate you being here and sharing your knowledge. Please stay safe and stay healthy. Thanks for being here tonight.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Reed. This is WATD 95.9 FM.